Hello, folks, and welcome to Strong Tower Radio Features. I'm your host, Tom Majeure, and today we're going to talk about Bear Smart. And with us, we have a wildlife biologist from the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, Vernon Richardson. Welcome, Vern.
Thank you.
It's a real privilege to have you here in our studios, and we'll be learning about how to be smart around bears.
Yep.
Great. Hey, let's have a word of prayer, and then we'll dive right into the subject. Our Father in heaven, we just thank you so much that you've created so many wonderful animals. The more we look, the more we are amazed at each species, subspecies, and then the characteristics of each animal. Help us to be good stewards, to take care of, do our part as your stewards here on earth. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, Vern, when we talk about bears, what are the different attitudes that people have? You're a wildlife biologist, and you've got the technical, you've got the training, but what are some of the misnomers, maybe myths about bears that you would like to discount right up front?
All right. So a fun one off the bat is bears eat bee larvae far more frequently than honey. If a bear destroys a beehive,
yes,
they're not after the honey.
Really?
They're after the bee larvae. It makes no difference to a beekeeper. The hive is destroyed.
It's lost.
But Winnie the Pooh,
yes,
was not after honey.
Really?
I mean, he was, but he wasn't if he was real.
Okay.
They'll eat honey, but that's just empty calories. And bee larvae, it has fat and protein, which are lacking in most other food sources that really bears have access to.
So really what that is that's developing, are they eggs or they're larvae?
They would be larvae. It's a different life stage. So now you're going to ask me about bugs. I'm not a bug expert.
Okay,
but my understanding of bugs, hopefully there's no bug people out there listening. You know, you have an egg that develops into a larva, and then similar to a butterfly, you have an egg, then you have a caterpillar, which would be equivalent to the larva. And then you have a pupa stage with bees or ants, for that matter. They eat ant nest and ant larva as well. And they will eat the larva or the pupa stage while it's transitioning from the larva to the adult form.
Wow. Any other, now what are some of the most amazing things about bears? Kind of like amazing facts. We have a program called Amazing Facts. So what is an amazing fact about bears?
Probably their sense of smell. Their sense of smell is many, many, many times better than a dog's sense of smell,
which is
many times better than a person's sense of smell.
Wonderful, wonderful.
So, you know, a dog's sense of smell is something around 100 times better than a human's.
That's significant.
And a bloodhound is something around 300 times better than a human, so three times better than your average dog.
Okay.
And a bear is 7 times better than a bloodhound. So if you do that math out, a bear will smell it. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter how well you think you cleaned it or put it away or hid it. A bear will smell it.
Well, if they can smell it, what chance do you have? Well, what do you do? And we're kind of digging deep into some of the details that we'll be talking about, but how do you secure, what do we need to secure from these bears, and how do we do it?
Basically, there's going to have to be a physical barrier of some sort.
It can't be a smell barrier.
No. As their sense of smell gets better, their ability to differentiate between different smells at the same time is part of that sense of smell. If you can't mask it. You're not likely going to mask it. If it's a food source, they can just discount whatever they don't like smelling. And if you think you're going to overpower their sense of smell around your house that you want to live in, if you succeed, you won't be living there.
Wow.
Because it's going to overpower your sense of smell as well. You might be able to dissuade them if they're not that committed to the idea to start with, but you know, really that's not having the food source or the attractant there, or having some sort of physical barrier is really the best way to protect it.
Let's come back to that a little bit later, but in our society, we've kind of over-glorified animals and bears. and we have Smokey the Bear. So I've noticed that they've changed his image a little bit from kind of a friendly old guy to kind of a little bit, something a little standoffish, just a little kind of stern. What are some myths, if you wish, about how the media, if you wish, cartoons present different bear caricatures? I mean, what about Yogi the Bear and Boo Boo?
Yeah, I mean, you end up with two extremes.
Okay.
You have a bear is out to hunt you down and kill you extreme. Movies, TV, fairy tales to some degree, normally wolves and fairy tales, but
okay.
You know, the bear is a predatory animal and it's waiting behind the tree in the woods to eat children, that, you know, whatever. So, whatever the storyline is. Or you have
that's off the other, the yes, one end of the spectrum.
That's on one end. And then at the other end, you have Winnie the Pooh or
soft, cuddly,
Yogi
cute.
Bear who steals a picnic basket and runs off and, you know,
gets a good laugh.
It's just all fun and games. You know, it wasn't that many years ago you had people feeding bears out the windows at Yellowstone. And they have grizzly bears out there. In Michigan, all we have are black bears. They might be a different color variant, but by species, they are black bears. Grizzly bears are predatory. They are a predator, whereas
really?
Black bears, they're opportunistic, but they're not equipped to hunt down animals, really, and they don't seem to have the attitude for it, typically.
Well, I'm sure glad that we have black bears.
Yes. I've told a lot of people my job would be very different if we had grizzlies here.
Wow.
I know, talked to people who've worked with grizzlies. It is a very different, it's a different storyline. It's a different discussion when you have food sources around houses and grizzly bears versus black bears. So bears aren't either extreme. Black bears are not either extreme.
Well, good. Hey, let's talk about bears. You've talked about grizzly bears and black bears. There's polar bears, but we don't have them here. So
correct. No matter how cold it gets every winter, we don't have polar bears here.
It seems like we do, but anyway, hey, kind of give us the spectrum there, the species of bears.
So the North American bear species, there's a few other around the world that I'm not super familiar with. Polar bears, and then we have grizzlies and black bears. Black bears are the smallest of the three. They are the least likely to cause problems for people as far as, you know, attacks or anything like that.
But don't play with them.
Yes, they're not. They're this kind of difficult mix of they're not something to be scared of, and yet they can also cause problems when we as people train them to have bad behaviors that puts them in bad positions.
Is that term habitualized or
habituated? There's a few different terms. It's depending on exactly what the topic is.
Well, good. Now, is it true that not all black bears are black?
Yes.
Why?
So it's a question of genetics, which is true of everything. All physical attributes are at some point genetic. So black bears are generally black, but the color genes that code the black pigmentation can be different. Again, black coloration is the primary genotype and phenotype. Some geographical areas have a higher incidence of, say, brown or cinnamon colored bears. In some cases, you can get almost white or blonde bears. Occasionally, very, very, very rarely, you get like a bluish gray color. A lot of black bears, especially as cubs, will have a white mark on their chest, like a blaze.
Okay.
A lot of them grow out of that, but some adults will still have that color variation. And then even black bears around here, most of them will have some brown, like right around their, like on the edge of their lips, around their nose, around their eyes a little bit sometimes. You get some really cool variations with some bears. We have a lot more brown. Like the coat color is black, but they have a lot of brown in areas on their face.
Now, what about their population numbers and their geographical distribution across the state of Michigan?
Yeah, so there are a lot more bears in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan than the Lower Peninsula. There's, by last estimate, I say estimate because it's really hard to count wild animals. They don't line up. You can't take a census. They don't return paperwork.
Yeah. They don't show up when you tell them to.
They don't show up where you tell them to when you tell them to. So our best way, the best knowledge we have of wild animals with very rare exception, is an estimate of some sort. So our best estimate for black bears in Michigan is 2,200 plus adult bears in the lower peninsula, and then 10,000 plus somewhere around that in the upper peninsula.
So most bears prefer the UP?
They don't travel between the two very often. So it's not a, where did they wind up? That's the effect of long-term human action, largely. There would have been a lot more bears in the lower peninsula before people came in and killed the vast majority of them. And then their numbers have been growing a lot in the last 20 years. And then, you know, going back to 100 years, there were very, very, very few in the lower peninsula 100 years ago.
What about habitat? Where are they usually, besides upper peninsula, lower peninsula? What is urban versus rural, fields versus forests?
They're not much of a grassland species.
So that kind of wipes out some of lower Michigan.
Yes. So some areas of lower Michigan aren't probably going to be very good bear habitat. But brushy areas, treed, forested areas, part of what makes it difficult for my job managing bears and problems with bears and people is neighborhoods in forested areas, bears are perfectly comfortable in a lot of those. You have the natural foods of the forested area, and then you have the human influence foods that people put out for other creatures typically.
Like that, dog or wild, or maybe for your cattle or something like that?
You have some of the livestock foods, but primarily it's bird food.
Okay.
Whether it's seed or suet, it's food, and bears will eat that.
You know, really, I was pretty much not aware of that until some of the signage that went up a decade or so ago, and so now we're more. What, we'll come back to that. What about the... What is the human influence on bears? Did we touch the diet pretty completely?
There's some interesting research going on right now to look at how much of a bear's diet in areas with a lot of human interaction, human population, is actually coming from human food. Not that they're eating all of that from trash, but things where, you know, if you have a cornfield and bears are eating the corn in the cornfield, you know, if we type that as human food or food that is placed by people. So if you have
cultivated
or bird seed, suet, dog food, cat food, people feeding bears intentionally, people feeding deer, and the bears are happy to eat that versus the natural food sources. We don't have that data back yet. They're doing some really cool chemical work looking at bear hair and what the chemical makeup is of the hair. And tracing back specific isotopes, specific types of molecules back. It's pretty cool when we get the data, hopefully. So they did that work in Wisconsin, and they found a very high percentage of a bear's diet in that area of Wisconsin was from human-placed foods. Mm. They have a little different regime there for when they allow people to have food out for bears specifically. So I would think our data will be different, but there's a lot of human food, human-influenced food, human-placed food entering a bear's diet.
So, you know, you've always had a feeling, but this may be some hard research, at least a beginning of it.
Exactly.
Fantastic. Well, folks, you're listening to Strong Tower Radio Feature, and we're talking about Bear Smart. I'm here with Vern Richardson. He's a wildlife biologist with the Michigan Department of Natural Resources. We'll be back after these messages.
I am so thankful that Strong Tower Radio provides solid, biblical teaching and God-honoring music to encourage me day by day. I have been so blessed by the programming I hear, and I count it a privilege to be a regular supporter of this station. Won't you pray for Strong Tower Radio? And then call 877-278-5512 or go online to strongtowerradio.org to make a tax-free donation to keep this radio station on the air.
Well, folks, Vern Richardson, wildlife biologist from the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, is back with us on Strong Tower Radio Features. I'm your host, Tom Majeure. We're talking about bears. We're talking about Bear Smart. And Vern, we were talking about some of the physical characteristics of bear. There's a couple of things that we still need to clean up.
Yeah, so black bears in Michigan, males are normally 130 up to 500 or a little bit heavier. A 500-pound black bear is a huge bear.
What is the average size?
Most of the bears that people are seeing in their backyard getting their bird feeder are probably 200 pounds.
Okay.
Maybe 250. Not that you couldn't have a bigger one, but most of them are a lot lighter. They look heavier than they are.
Okay.
They have a thick furry coat on them that adds a few inches on either shoulder, and that adds a lot of pounds. And it's a big creature in your backyard you weren't expecting to see.
That's right.
Females are lighter, typically. They're anywhere from 150 to 300 pounds.
Okay, what about the life cycle of a bear? You know, we all know that they hibernate, but what do they do the rest of the year? What do they do while they're hibernating?
Well, so to get technical, they don't hibernate.
Oh, no.
Slightly different scientific term.
Okay.
Everyone says hibernate. I don't normally tell people that that's not quite the right word, but technically. So they can wake up instantly. So if you have a bear in a den and you bother it, it is awake instantly. Whereas wow. Hibernating animals don't wake up that quickly.
Okay. Does the word tuper mean anything?
Or? Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that would be the more appropriate term for it. Everyone says hibernate. I'm not going to yell at anyone for saying hibernate, but technically it's not quite hibernating. Because bears are eating primary plant foods, again, and around here, black bears live in an area that all the plant foods dry and dead and not growing all winter, and there's a lot of snow and cold. They've decided just to, quote unquote, hibernate.
It's not worth it.
Exactly. They put on all of the calories they need to eat in the growing season, basically, and then as a way of not burning as much energy, go into a state of inactivity for the time where there's just not much food out there. If they're walking around trying to find food in January, they're just not going to find much. So to save energy, they end up finding somewhere comfortable, lay down, and basically just stay put. There are cases even around here where if there is a high calorie food source available, they will stay active all winter. And then they also give birth while they're denned. Females that are giving birth that year.
Now, what are the months they're in the dens? And then are they in dens in the non-tuper state?
Yeah, so a bear, denning being a behavior, not a location. I've seen bear dens that are just an open nest on top of the ground in a cattail marsh. I've also seen where they dig a hole in the ground. They only use dens really during the denning season, the off season, the winter season. They don't use dens in the summer.
So when do they first go in? They go in October? Does the male also, adult male also den?
Yes. So around here, you know, most of your listening area here, we have real winter, so to speak.
That's right.
And so we have a time period where there's not much food availability. And so basically all the bears are going to den for a time period. Female sows that are going to give birth that winter typically den first. They'll den in October at some point, probably. Females with yearlings, so they would have given birth just about a year previous. They'll den at some point, but they have, in essence, teenage kids with them. And I don't know.
You can't sleep.
Exactly. They figure it out at some point, but they tend to be up a little bit more. And then solo bears, whether that's males or young females that aren't reproducing yet, they will den basically, I think, my experience has been based on food supply. So if there's a whole bunch of acorns out there still, or they're next to a cornfield, or they have another food source.
Why den?
Exactly. If you equate food with money, if you're making money, you might as well keep going, because you don't know when spring is going to happen. But if you're just wandering around an empty landscape that doesn't have any food, you might as well go to bed. And
right. There's
nothing happening, you might as well go to bed. So up here, around here, normally bears are denned by mid-December.
Okay.
Again, weather, food supply, individual bear dependent. But by Christmas, there's not to say you couldn't have a bear up, but pretty much they're all denned by then. I normally get the first report of bears up and active around, again, in the Cadillac area here, right about now, first week of March, second week of March, somewhere like that. And then sows with cubs, they tend to wait a little bit because those cubs are born end of the year or first couple weeks of January, and they're born very small, hairless. They have a lot of developing to do before they can be out and about on their own, even outside of the den with mom. And so they put on weight very quickly. Their eyes open, they put on fur. I don't normally hear about cubs up and active until middle of April, late April, something in there is when I start hearing about cubs active. But there'll be other, you know, lone bears or sows with yearlings active as soon as the weather's reasonable.
When do females start bearing? What age?
Around here, it's typically somewhere around 3.5 to 5.5. A lot of that is based on diet. In areas with a lot of food, a lot of high quality foods, they grow faster and they have cubs younger and they have more cubs in reaction to abundant resources. They'll have cubs at a higher rate.
So you brought that up. What is a normal cub number of cubs?
Around here, 2 to 4.
2 to 4.
In areas of lower nutritional value or higher bear density relative to available habitat, then it's 2. 2 is pretty common. A lot of sows will have 1 for as their first litter is a single cub.
And then they have more. What about the average or the oldest bear?
I think there have been some recorded that were 30 years old. You know, a 30-year-old bear is a very old bear. It's one of those where that's not the average life expectancy for a bear, but that is, they could get, potentially, you could have individuals to get that old. I don't know what the average is here. A lot younger than
sure.
that.
What about their range? How far do they travel?
You know, a bear can travel a long ways. There have been some long-distance movements for bears. We have GPS collars out on some bears, and they could travel hundreds of miles and turn around and come right back home. Far more likely is they spend their time in a home range, which is the area that they'd call home, basically. Seasonally, they'll use all of their home range based on food needs, water, space, whatever else. Females around here probably have a home range of about 50 square miles. So not miles square, square miles. So 5 miles by 10 miles.
Okay.
Or something similar. And then males will normally have a larger home range that overlaps with a number of females. And so their home ranges are 300 square miles. Mm. Highly variable depending on habitat and population.
Well, good. Let's talk about human interaction. That's where the fear factor comes in, or what do we need to know?
You know, bears aren't looking to cause problems with people. They're generally shy. No offense to bears. I call them lazy. Not in a bad way, but they're trying to conserve energy. They have to eat their entire year's worth of calories in the time they're active. Bears eat 5,000 calories a day normally. In the fall, when they're really putting on weight, acorns are out or other food sources, they can eat 20,000 calories a day.
Wow, 4 times as much.
Yeah. So that's a lot of food. It's a lot of food they have to find and eat so they can make it through the winter. And for a female that's going to give birth, her body has to carry all the nutrition to be pregnant while she's denned, give birth, feed the cubs, and still be on her feet when the grass finally turns green in spring. And so there's plenty of natural food for that. The problem is we as people have very high quality foods associated with us.
High density calories,
yes,
and nutrition.
Yes. So I did a little math because I like to nerd out on these sometimes. So again, you figure 5,000 calories a day or up to 20,000 calories typically fall or based on availability. So, you know, that's a lot of food. A single suet cake is 2,400 calories.
Wow, that's pretty dense.
If they raid 2 backyards and eat 2 suet cakes, that is their daily intake requirement.
They can go back to bed.
They can go back to bed, or everything else they eat beyond that
is surplus
that ensures their survival towards next year.
That's comparison, a high-value target, your suet feeder.
Exactly. I did a little math here again. That's almost 2 gallons of blueberries. So if they're eating wild blueberries, or they can go hit a single suet cake in someone's backyard, they have to find and harvest and eat 2 gallons of berries, or walk through a few backyards and find 1 suet cake. Sunflower seeds are similarly very
dense.
They're fat. They're fatty. They're oil. Black oil sunflower seeds. You know, a single suet cake is about 9 cups of seed. I did a little to compare. Lettuce, not a big part of a bear's diet, but if you figure lettuce is somewhat approximate to
grasses
or other greens, you need 350 cups of lettuce to equal the energy content in 1 thing of suet. I may have done the math wrong on that. Hope not. Someone correct me. But, you know, again, if you're eating grass or other plants, there's not a lot of calories in it. And so they will take the risk of being around people to get the payday of half of their daily diet in a single suet cake.
So let's go to the point that many are concerned about, or they've heard stories, or there's a little fear factor there. What can we do to remove the sources or to put those barriers, which you talked about at the beginning of the program? Now is your time to nail it.
Yeah. So if you live in areas with bears, which in Michigan is Muskegon North, pretty much. We have some bears south of there. If you have bears, you'll know it. You'll find out pretty quickly. The reality of living in an area that has bears is summer feeding of birds is probably not really going to work well. Again, you have an incredible weight of food for a bear that they will go through just about anything to get to. Thankfully, the solution to that problem is pretty simple, if not so much fun, is put the bird seed away for the summer.
Putting it in your garage, is that sufficient enough?
Typically, unless you're trying to feed during the day. If you put the bird feeders out during the day and put them away at night, your yard still smells, again, back to their sense of smell. Your yard smells like food. And they come in and the food's gone. To a bear, I could hypothesize.
Right.
I'm not a bear psychologist.
Right.
It's not a job idea. But they would think that they should come earlier next time because the food was here, but now it's gone. And eventually, they'll come by at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, destroy your bird feeder, and now they just learned, because they have a great memory, they just learned, oh, I just come during daytime. And then we end up with bears that have been trained by people to eat in backyards and to come during daytime. And that is going to cause a problem.
So no summer feeding in bear intense areas.
Yes.
What other things can we do?
The bird feeders, suet cake, sunflower seeds are the biggest things. If you have a bear in the area that's getting into your trash cans, again, put those trash cans inside. If you
put them out at the last minute just before trash pickup.
Ideally. And I understand there's a lot of more rural trash collection services that start at 5 o'clock in the morning and you're not going to be out there. Do what you can.
What about these fences or containers? Do those work?
Electric fence setups work quite well for bears. Most anything else, unless it's a physically locking mechanism, a bear can go over, under, or through it. If you put a concrete block on top of your trash can, if you can lift it, a bear can lift it. If you can stretch the bungee strap, a bear can stretch the bungee strap. And so either a door that locks or, again, electric fence is an option because we know how to hit the off switch, and so far bears haven't learned that. And then the other things that bears can get into would be things like outside pet food, stuff like that. You have to figure out a way to put it away when the bears are active. If you don't live in an area with a lot of bears and you have a bear that happens upon your spot that you thought was safe, putting everything away for a couple weeks, let the bear move on, may work for a time. If you live in an area with a lot of bears, you're probably just going to have to keep it put away for the bear's active season. They remember things very well. They can remember where they got a meal years ago. And if they got a meal at your house, they will come back and check it.
Wow. Well, Vern, I really appreciate you stopping by the Strong Tower Radio Studios and having a chance to talk about bears and being smart about bears. Well, you've been listening to Vern Richardson. He's a wildlife biologist with the Michigan Department of Natural Resources. And I'm Tom Majeure with Strong Tower Radio. You've been listening to Strong Tower Radio Features. Bye now.